Creators Design Media presents Servants of the Secret Fire, narrated by Alyssa Sanford, written and produced by Dan Sanford. You can find out more about Servants of the Secret Fire by following us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Google Plus at Servants of the Secret Fire.
Hi there. My name is Alyssa Sanford, daughter of author, life coach, and pipe maker Daniel Sanford. I am thrilled to read aloud my father's book and truly honored that he has chosen to use my voice for these episodes. So without further ado, I present to you Servants of the Secret Fire by Daniel C. Sanford. Chapter 1. Harvest Season. 2732 BC, Dusk, Mesopotamia. Japheth was being hunted. The silence of the forest, the hair standing on the back of his neck, and that now familiar feeling of disquiet told him so. To Japheth, there was no mystery in the identity of his shadows. The mystery was in how many, how soon, and how to avoid the situation altogether. The muted light cast by the setting sun as it reached dying tendrils through the forest canopy did little to assist the young man in his late teens as he squinted in the half-light and strained to hear some new sound that would give away his enemy's position. He knew their identity because he'd been brought up on their lore. For the last 10 generations, the tribe known as the Ben Kana had unceasingly perpetuated their ancient and intensely personal war against Japheth's people, and today, it would seem, against Japheth.
I'm alone.
Against community rule, Japheth had ventured outside of his village without a companion, and the irony was not lost on him. Of course he had known that leaving the village unattended was forbidden. He had always known. But as usual, this knowledge hadn't kept his ego needs from taking precedence over tribal rules and regulations. Letting a goat wander off that had been in his care was not only a personal embarrassment, it could also bring about stiff punishment if discovered by the elders. Not to mention father, he mused. Japheth had thought about the possibility that at least one of his friends wouldn't talk afterward if he brought him along. But in the end, he reasoned that the risk to both pride and hide exceeded the reward of communal obedience.
There it is again.
The snapping of twigs and the soft rustle of brush. He discerned that the sound had come from behind him and off to his right. Slowing his gait, then stopping completely, he dropped into a defensive crouch. Thankfully, he wasn't defenseless, and silently breathed a prayer of thanks to the ancient for reminding him to arm himself before setting out. It rankled him to admit it, but due to his youth and incomplete training, Japheth had not yet attained to the full rights of the Hakana, the warrior guild of his people. Presently, he was 2/3 of the way through a training process that began for those boys who showed aptitude around the age of 5 cycles. This process culminated at young adulthood only after the acolyte had passed a succession of rites of passage. The first rite centered on battle prowess and strategy with the Hadar. The final rites dealt exclusively with the fire. Listening to the sounds of the forest, his calloused hands twisted around the comfortably familiar weapon. The Hadar was the weapon of choice among the Hakana. As far as weapons technology went, it was relatively simple. A long cedar staff, approximately 6 feet in length, sealed and hardened with a special coating of sap manufactured by the elderly women of the village. At one end of the staff was a bronze spearhead, flat, triangular, and honed to a razor-sharp edge. At the opposite end was a 3-inch diameter bronze orb, which through the correct application of momentum and centrifugal force could easily crush the bones of any assailant. The spearhead was comprised of the same quantity of metal as the orb, giving the weapon remarkable balance. Japheth's muscles tensed as he crouched lower and his hands gripped the smooth wooden shaft of his hadar more deliberately. The air remained still and the forest silent, yet still no trace of his stalkers was evident. Several minutes passed before Japheth allowed himself to relax, breathed deeply, and stood from his crouch, the tension dissipating from his unconsciously knotted shoulders. Apparently, he mused, the Ben Kana had been too few in number or too poorly armed today to risk an attack. Japheth smirked and relished the thought that he, himself, had intimidated his enemies into abandoning the kill, on the day of his first encounter, no less. As Japheth reached out to stretch his stiff and idle limbs, he rehearsed in his mind the boast he planned on relaying to his fellow acolytes back in the village. "Friends, you wouldn't believe..." A goat's head fell from the canopy above and thudded to the ground in front of him. As Japheth stepped back from the gruesome appendage staring up at him with sightless eyes, everything seemed to happen at once. From the branches above, three forms dropped to the earth, forming a rough triangular perimeter around him. Almost as quickly as their feet touched the ground, there they were upon him, crude bronze blades hacking away. Japheth's hadar came up instinctively, blocking the initial two blows and twirling swiftly, creating space between he and his attackers. Even as he settled himself into a defensive posture, Japheth's mind began to rapidly replay the lessons drilled into his skull for years regarding Ben Kana warfare. The Ben Kana are crude and undisciplined in their manner of war, but make up for it with their recklessness, abandon, and ferocity. The Ben Kana's style of battle is to throw themselves into the fray without fear, then relish tales of glory around the campfire if they survive the encounter. The Ben Kana take no prisoners. For one brief moment, Japheth considered using the fire. His knowledge of the sacred fire was rudimentary, as was the knowledge of all the Hakana acolytes at his stage of development. They had seen the fire, drawn by others. They had been instructed as to its origins and applications, but their actual experience of drawing the fire had been limited to the most fleeting of sensations. But three Ben Kana, thought Japheth. Certainly, he pushed the thought from his mind. Even more frightening than the whipping he would receive from the elders for drawing the fire before passing the rites, Japheth feared the tales told of what the fire could do to those that were ill-prepared for the experience. His teachers used every opportunity to tell communal stories of the burned-out bodies and minds of the foolish ones who had drawn the fire into them in either precocious ignorance or prideful rebellion. Japheth would take his chances with his hadar. Dodging one blow and parrying another, he gripped his hadar with both hands toward the spear end and swung the bronze orb down sharply toward the legs of his foremost attacker. Soft metal met bone, and the kneecap of one bearded and wild-eyed Ben Kana shattered, sending the screaming warrior crashing to the ground. In the absence of the first assailant, the perimeter was broken, and Japheth sprinted out of the reach of the two remaining attackers. The Ben Kana quickly gave chase down the twisting path, with the younger and fleeter of foot of the two outrunning his partner and quickly closing the gap between himself and his fleeing quarry. Japheth could hear the man's labored breath on the trail behind him and smell the reek of his soiled rags. But as his assailant approached to within arm's reach, Japheth swung the staff under his right arm, positioning the spearhead behind him, then planted his feet and thrusted backwards as he came to a skidding halt. The shocked Ben Kana had the blade of a spearhead protruding through the back of his right shoulder before he even realized what had happened. Pain and surprise showed on the man's grimy face as he fell to his knees, alive but incapacitated. Planting his foot on the stunned man's chest, Japheth wrenched the hadar free with a technique he had rehearsed countless times on the sparring grounds, causing the man on the floor to writhe in agony anew. He barely had time to lift his weapon before the trailing Ben Kana was upon him, slashing with his serrated blade. The initial blow was swiftly parried and countered with a well-positioned foot to the chest of the much larger man, knocking him off balance. Japheth turned and bolted in the general direction of the village, praying silently that he might still outdistance the remaining Benkanal lumbering after him. Recovering quickly, the huge warrior gave chase with a snarl of rage. Winded and frightened, Japheth tore down the trail, cresting a rise that revealed a steep decline just yards ahead. Down the embankment he skidded, sometimes running, sometimes sliding toward the forest floor. He risked one quick glance behind and was able to see the remaining Benkanah beginning his initial descent. The glance proved just long enough for Japheth to miss seeing the root which jutted up from the uneven hillside. His foot caught the root, sending him sprawling headfirst down the embankment. Japheth landed hard on his right side, continuing to skid down the slope. The Hadar fell from his grip, and before being able to come to a complete stop, the Benkanah was on top of him. Japheth dodged the first blow, hearing the crude sword thud into the hard clay to the left of his skull. The second blow, however, found its mark and bore deep into his shoulder. A shockwave of pain gripped the boy, and he screamed out in agony. Yanking the blade free of its mark, the Benkanah raised his arm from the killing blow, lifting both his head and his voice in a chilling scream that cursed both Japheth and his god. In desperation, Japheth groped with his left hand blindly, discovering the shaft of his fallen Hadar. Lifting the weapon, he blocked the falling blow and felt the Hadar crack and give way in its middle. But the weapon retained just enough of its rigidity for Japheth to swing the orb side of the staff and catch the Benkanah flush on the left side of his skull. The man toppled to the ground, rolled to the base of the hill, and lay motionless. Silence settled back over the forest as Japheth lay in a puddle of his own blood. Gasping for breath, he breathed a quick prayer to the ancient for his mercy, then gritted his teeth against the pain. Slowly, he struggled to rise to his feet, faltered, and fell to his hands and knees. He calculated that the village was only a half mile off, and believed that with a moment's rest he could still traverse the distance, even though both strength and sun were fading quickly. Leaning on tired and burning arms, Japheth attempted to gather his wits as he stared dully at the path beneath him. The ground before him trembled slightly. He thought he had hallucinated. In his dazed and weakened sense, it took Japheth a second to process what was taking place, but in moments, a recognizable pattern could be detected. At intervals of 3 seconds, the muffled thud of a large object pressing its enormous weight into the earth could be both felt and heard. His chest vibrated with each successive footfall as he watched, transfixed at the sight of the soil beneath him, bouncing in cadence with what he now knew could only be the footsteps of a nightmare. This fear was confirmed by the crackling of tree branches and the enormous shadow suddenly cast over him by a form that now stood between him, the setting sun, and most importantly, home. Japheth raised his wolf-gray eyes, following the contour of the shadow that lay on the earth before him, until it touched sandaled feet, easily 3 times the size of his own. His eyes continued their journey upward, taking in legs thicker than 10-year-old oaks and knotted with muscle. They passed over a ragged loincloth, a torso that seemed chiseled of granite, a stout neck, and pronounced jaw, till they finally came to rest on narrowed red eyes. Nephilim.
Thank you for listening to Servants of the Secret Fire, Episode 1, Harvest Time. To download more episodes of Servants of the Secret Fire, please search for us on iTunes, Servants of the Secret Fire Podcast, or SoundCloud at Daniel C. Sanford. You can find out more about Servants of the Secret Fire on Facebook at Servants of the Secret Fire Podcast, Twitter at The Secret Fire Audio, and Instagram at #ServantsOfTheSecretFire. Music and sound effects were provided by freesound.org and thefreemusicarchive.com.